Welcome to the latest episode of The Agent's Angle, featuring two topics for which many in the football world may want to avoid at their peril. With me, Jonathan Booker.
And me, Peter Palaiologos. On The Agent's Angle this week, we'll be looking at the spectre and unavoidable issue of tax in the football world and how it impacts agents and also their clients, whether they be players or clubs.
And sadly, we can't even get respite from the topic of FIFA football agent regulations for just 1 week, as we look at the upheaval and damage it is continuing to create for agents and agencies around the world. And we look at whether in some cases, compensation for such damages could be sought from FIFA.
All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle.
For what would have been the first planned episode of The Agent's Angle for 2024, welcome. But as we know, the agent's world is an even more confusing landscape than ever in terms of football agent regulation. And thus, this has impacted on our schedule for this year already, with the last week's earlier than planned episode.
Yes, here we go again. The FFAR regulatory landscape, of which all us football agents still operate on, has changed again. The transfer window is on at the moment in January, especially in Europe, and a new circular has just been released by FIFA on agents just yesterday. So much going on, Jonathan.
So like an unpalatable medicine, let's start with our regular dose of FFAR, the FIFA football agent regulations. And with that, as you mentioned, Peter, there was a new circular from FIFA that landed just a couple of days ago on the 11th of January. And if a circular 1873 didn't cause confusion a few weeks ago, this one, circular 1874, seems to attempt to clarify a few things.
Yes, it's published to other member associations of FIFA. It's entitled FIFA Football Agent Regulations, Licensing Updates, and Information on the Agent's Chamber. I don't want to go too much deep dive into this circular because I've seen a lot of mentioned across the board on LinkedIn and other platforms about what this circular means, but it's still implementing the FFAR. Over 5,000 football agents have been granted a license worldwide. The key points in this circular are that one is very interesting, that any breaches of the FFAR, including evidence of non-licensed activity, can be reported on the FIFA reporting portal. Now, we've discussed this before, that unlicensed activity is a big concern for the licensed agents or the agencies, and that could also be for clubs to use, not just other agents. The other couple of clarifying points, there will be an exam, and we call this, there will be an exam in 2024. You need to probably register now if you haven't taken the exam. To any listener out there intending to take the exam, the date is 22 May 2024. Please get on the agent's portal of FIFA and you'll see all the details there. The other one that I'm really interested in is it talks about the FIFA Football Agent Working Group and makes a mention in terms of the costs. So the costs cannot exceed $600 for any member associations to charge for the exam. But also in terms of consultation, and I know this came from the African Football Agents Association. They made this recommendation and they've been making it for a very long time to reduce costs that FIFA and also member associations in terms of licensing or licensing renewals, that the renewal for next year will be $300. And that also reminds me actually of an earlier recommendation made by an African agent, a Ghana-based agent to FIFA, where they said they wanted all player agent representative agreements to be 3 years duration between an agent and a player. That was accepted, I believe, in the second or third draft, but then it was removed because of other stakeholders who didn't want that, back to 2 years. So FIFA does make changes. We have to acknowledge that, Jonathan, and this is one of them. But they've heard one of the stakeholders, especially coming out of Africa, where affordability to operating the business can be an issue for a lot of African agents.
Yeah, and thus we await the next circular, dare I say the sequel of the FFAR saga with bated breath. More chapters than Star Wars at this rate. But on that same topic of FFAR, an article that we came across that posed an interesting question over FFAR being such a complicated and confusing area as it stands for pretty much all of us at the moment. Now, this article was in Inside Sport. by Callum Williams from the 2nd of January, and it's entitled FIFA Prepare for Impending Lawsuits from Agents Over New Regulations. However, from the headline, this article is not as I first thought it would read. I don't know about you. As I thought it would relate to one of the various challenges to FFAR around the world that we had likely mentioned before on the agents angle. However, on reading this article in full, and I will say it is somewhat short on detail and specifics, it is worth considering what it puts forward. And it's a matter that I've considered since the FFAR was announced roughly a year ago, and also something we've discussed privately, Peter, and I believe others have also considered this matter. So with this article in mind and the proposition that's in it, we have to ask what I consider to be a reasonable question, and that is whether FIFA is potentially liable for any damages suffered by agencies and agents due to the questionable implementation of FFAR and the impact it has had and it's continuing to have. And this is regardless of what any final outcome will be, such as the ECJ ruling at the European Court of Justice. Plus, in the unlikely event that FIFA were to revoke FFAR, the damage is arguably already done in many cases, and some may even seek reparations or compensation anyway in that circumstance.
Yes, it's an interesting article. Agents have suggested that they've had to make changes, and we've discussed this before, they've had to make changes to new rep agreements with clients to insert the 3% or the 5% if it was under a certain threshold. They couldn't do multi-representation. That was a big issue, where they can only do the engaging club and the player. And we know a lot of agents are involved in broking. And now everything's shifted. We no longer have the cap. So basically, agents are now penalized facing the January transfer window. And the article does say that they've been penalized because they've already got written contracts and have had, and I quote from the article, huge loss of earnings because of the 3% commission rates in their contracts with players. And some of them have lost clients. But the lawsuit is suggested that it's against FIFA, or a potential lawsuit, I should rephrase that, to regain lost earnings. So the article has really emphasized that a lot of agents are questioning whether they have a right to sue. I mean, they're going to their lawyers. But that is a very difficult for me, because I think that it's very difficult to sue a regulator. Regulations always change. Yes, they do affect the business, but where do you go to?
As a non-legal observer, Peter, as many of our listeners are, I would argue as a layperson that there are grounds here for agents, either individually or even collectively, to seek some form of compensation from FIFA. I've argued previously that agents and intermediaries, whereby they agree to abide by the regulations of a sports governing body, such as FIFA or a national association, have a right to expect the authority to uphold the regulations. And then should that governing body fail to adequately uphold those regulations, especially where the likes of a signed declaration, a code of conduct or memorandum of understanding is completed between the two parties, then the governing body have failed in their fiduciary duty and duty of care to those participants and thus are liable for their failings. But in this case, with FFAR, it isn't so much the regulations themselves we're talking about, but the impact of what many consider to be a dreadful and rushed implementation process by FIFA, and thus the confusion and damage it has caused and continues to cause. As you've rightly mentioned, this ranges from implementing agreements and contracts in an effort to comply with FFAR elements, such as the cap, which at the moment is currently suspended. And this has been done diligently and compliantly by agents and others. And I know some from the legal profession are being somewhat wise after the event, dare I say, in their commentary via various social media channels and elsewhere, in saying they would have advised against implementing FFAR compliant clauses in agent representation agreements and contracts until a later date, such as the ECJ ruling. But I will say this. One, thanks for that, those who are making such comments. Not. Talk about shutting the stable door after the horse has escaped. And two, I'm glad that you aren't my lawyer, as I know the good and competent lawyers have been ensuring their clients' agreements are compliant with all eventualities from December 2023 onwards. when we first saw what form FFAR proposals took, whether a partial implementation of FFAR followed, a full implementation of FFAR, or even FFAR being scrapped. Those plans and eventualities have been planned for by many good lawyers. Granted, getting these things done properly in legal terms is often costly, and many agents appreciate that some clients prefer the back of a postage stamp approach to a contract than a thorough and compliant one. And that might explain what you said earlier about agents possibly losing out on clients. But I'm not going to ask you to comment on the conduct of your fellow lawyers, Peter, or ask you to give legal advice. But I do believe it is a valid question as to where the FIFA may be somewhat liable if someone has suffered loss or damage due to the impact of FFAR implementation.
Before I go to some degree to answering that question, I will say this. Good agents would have had other services, and the way they contract, especially other services, checked through good lawyers. They would have good trigger clauses. For example, the German link came quite early. They could have adopted a clause around that, or changes in regulations. I know that we don't all have hindsight, but good lawyers will take into account what could happen. Now, back to your question, Jonathan. Seeking damages, which court would be suitable? Will you go to local courts? I think it's a very tough situation to predict. However, what is tougher generally, and I don't give legal advice on this show, is liability for the negligent exercise of a power conferred by a regulator is very hard to prove. You need to show specific duty or responsibility to the actual person affected, in this case, the agent. They need to see, you've got to see it very specific in terms of the case, and that the circumstances that have been created by the regulator made it very harsh for the agent. Now, a lot of agents will say, yes, that's been the case, but it's not that easy. I would say courts are not often asked to consider whether a regulator has caused damage to a business, because regulations change and regulators have a lot of power. Plus, I don't think any of the challengers have said that FIFA can't be the regulator. It's more as the impact of some of these regulations, and the big one being the cap. It's very rare to get over the line that there was a duty. And I'm talking mainly, you know, in terms of UK, Australia, American, that's the way sort of you look at the regulators. It's very hard to get to that level where it wasn't fair or reasonable. The courts haven't dealt with a lot of things in relation to regulators and their powers in terms of the effect on business. So anything could happen, but very difficult exercise in courts. And I think that's something that really needs a deep dive analysis by lawyers for any agent who really wants to go down that path, because I see it as very difficult.
I think we're at a tipping point with this thing about the authority of governing bodies in sports, especially football. We've had the ECJ ruling, which has brought into question whether FIFA and UEFA overstepped the mark with their powers and their regulations. And we're seeing a shift here. But my point is that if you want to take control of the situation, you've got to take responsibility for the actions in trying to take that control. And a couple of the challenges, I think, have intimated that they challenge FIFA's jurisdiction. Personally, I don't agree with that. We need a world governing body. We just need an effective, efficient and fair world governing body. I just think that rushed, ill-judged and inconsiderate implementation of FFAR by FIFA will come back to bite them on the backside in many ways. But many have warned them about that on so many occasions, stretching back many years, probably all the way back to that ill-fated meeting in 2018 that we've heard about and talked about. But enough on FFAR for now. We're going to switch to another matter that very few of us can escape, a bit like FFAR. And I believe it was one of the founding fathers of the USA, Benjamin Franklin, who made famous the phrase, "In this world, nothing is certain except death and taxes." And although it isn't the most joyous of topics, taxes are a vitally important area for agents and their clients to understand. But it is an area, sadly, where many come unstuck and find themselves at the mercy of, dare I say, far more powerful authorities than those governing football.
Yes, tax is a very important issue for agents, players, clubs, everyone involved in football, because we're a multinational business. There are two interesting articles that I want to raise. Before I go to those articles, though, the big issue worldwide is not so much the income tax. It's the sponsorship, endorsement, and commercial rights that operate for players who have that sort of multinational or national profile and how they're taxed. And a lot of us agents, we have a second contract with a player that relates to sponsorship, which is another service. And players themselves have to be very aware of their taxation position in terms of endorsement arrangements. Do they need a separate company or entity or not? And where is that company going to be located? So all that goes to the issue of tax. But I'll go straight into the articles now. The first article is How Overseas Sports Stars Are Taxed in the UK by Peter Fairchild, October 2023. And it talks about taxation in England. And in particular, two things. It starts off with how England and Ireland have to adopt to a better taxing regime if they're going to host bigger tournaments. But that's not the big issue here. The big issue that's addressed in this article is about UK tax liability. Now, the article frames that non-resident, so if you're a non-resident of the UK and you do some work there, if you have to pay your tax because you're domiciled somewhere else, you can't pay tax in two places because there's double tax arrangements, then you probably don't have to pay tax in the UK. But the key point in the article is non-UK resident sports people, a lot of Premier League players, Championship players, etc., are taxable in the UK because they're training and they're playing their football in English leagues. And the article is very interesting because it talks about the thresholds when you start paying tax. So your basic income tax rate in the UK is 20%, can go up to 40 and even to 45 on anything over £125,000. But also you allow deductions, so travel accommodation, coaching, all these can be taken out. But what stands out in this article by Peter Fairchild is the UK stands out as one of the few countries where additional tax is imposed on the segment of individuals' global endorsement income linked to their performances. So you can have an international profile, and we know the Premier League's big in Asia, and they clubs will sell merchandise. Players can have their own branding with different companies. Any endorsement income can be captured by the HMRC, which is the short name for the English Tax Office. And this article talks about endorsement income being a big issue, and advice really needs to be taken on that. Now, we're talking about endorsement, and I want to go to the second article. Ronaldo. He went to Juventus in 2019. It's an article based on Cristiano Ronaldo's image rights and income. We'll put it in the show notes. And this article from September 2023 by Dr. Mario Tenore, it's a very complex article, talks about tax treatment of income derived by exploitation of image rights by Cristiano Ronaldo. In Italy at the time, they had a flat tax regime. And the flat tax regime applied to foreign entities, including Cristiano Ronaldo, who would have had companies set up. And any endorsement income externally would have a flat tax. I think it's 100,000 euros, rather than be taxed as part of personal income tax. Now, this went to quite a few courts within Italy. Ronaldo was asked to pay tax. He was found to he had to pay it on his income tax rate, not just the substitute 100,000 euros. The thing about this case is, even if you earn your income, and again, the same story as what I mentioned with that HMRC approach, even if you earn your income in other countries, because we know Ronaldo is one of the world brands, and having a look at the article, you can do videos, you can do social media, that's all done overseas, etc. Still, there's a link to Italy, and that's how it was found, that unless you're able to demonstrate that your performance is outside Italy, very clearly, you separate the nexus, then if you can't provide proof of that activity being outside in terms of exploitation of your image rights, then you will have to pay tax within Italy. We know Cristiano was a tax resident because he was paying income tax, obviously, and that triggered also tax on his endorsement that was supposed to be taxed outside or promoted outside. So another interesting article. I will say this, that with Italy, we had the Beckham rule. And I'll mention this now. There was a Beckham rule where 50% tax break on salaries from players for abroad. So that's another tax issue in Italy. And I know AC Milan, a spokesperson from there, a lot of concern about removal of that. So right now, Italy as a market, not only have you got the Ronaldo factor or endorsement issue where your external endorsement can be taxed, subject obviously the matter goes to further appeal or anything, but also there's reduction on the 50% discount or rebate you got in Italy as a foreign player. And that's going to hurt a lot of foreign players in Italy and not good for their league.
I think it's important we point out, yes, that latter story is one of the biggest stars ever in football. But tax isn't limited to the superstars and their agents. Anyone is open to scrutiny from the tax authorities, whether it's an international player or a first-year professional, whether it's somebody playing in the UEFA Champions League or, dare I say, some obscure league elsewhere in the world. Yes, the big stars and their agents have far more complex tax arrangements with management companies, offshore elements and image rights, but they also have the means and expert advice to deal with that. I would say it's a sliding scale for all agents and their clients. And agents have got to be aware of knowing enough for each individual client, wherever they are on the football ladder and what stage of their footballing career they're at. Having access to that best qualified advice to protect their clients and themselves is so, so important. And that case with Ronaldo, that's just in one jurisdiction. Quite reasonably, another jurisdiction presents another set of rules and complications, as you said, Peter. And if a player client moves to another country, the agent and the client needs the right qualified advice there as well.
Yes, you definitely need advice everywhere you go. And simple questions. Is income tax paid in gross or net? What are the rates? Who pays the tax, the club or the player or the agent? What about payments to agents? Are they deducted? What about the family? If you bring over a family, do you get deductions for accommodation expenses, other rebates? Are you entitled to any other benefits? But income taxes differ all over the world, and especially in Europe. Football players do like going to low tax jurisdictions, and we know that. But I'll give you an example. It's not just Italy. Spain had the same special tax regime. They had a 24% tax rate and 19% for European Union residents, but they got rid of it as well because at the end of the day, they didn't want to have that discount. Portugal had tax relief for players that were non-residents, but that's gone as well. And even in Spain itself, it varies between the city. If you're in Madrid, the tax rate's 45.5%. But if you're in the Valencia community with Valencia and Villarreal, who are doing very well, it's 54% or around about those figures because they always change and we know that. But then if the agent does a reach of France and Holland allow football players to enjoy more favorable expatriate tax regime. So you're a foreign player, goes to France and Netherlands, and we know France is very highly taxed, then part of the salary is tax exempt. Basically, I think about 30% for France and Netherlands. So a lot of research, it's not just the tax that you have to pay, but your agent also has got to look at the tax regimes of each country and are there schemes about endorsement aspects, but also income tax. And I think we'll discuss later, Jonathan, VAT or other types of, I would say, consumer taxes.
It's all very fluid, very complicated, and you have to adapt to it. And it's all likely to change. Now, we're very fortunate that the author of one of those articles you referenced, Peter, relating to overseas sports stars and tax in the United Kingdom, is our guest today on the agent's angle. And so today we are joined by Pete Fairchild, who is an expert in matters such as tax in the sports world. And one very significant part of his client portfolio and experience is in the world of football. Pete is a qualified UK chartered tax advisor and fellow of the Association of Taxation Technicians. He's a partner and head of London private client tax team at Crowe UK LLP. Over many years, he has advised private clients on tax compliance and advisory matters, which has included acting for many domestic and international footballers, past and present. And I think it's important to point out that unlike some of the other highly qualified professionals that sit on the periphery of the sports and football world, Pete is an avid sports and football fan with an understanding of the nuances and specifics of this often wacky and unpredictable world in which we operate. Pete, welcome to the Agent's Angle.
Jonathan, hello, and hello, Peter. Thanks ever so much for inviting me to join you.
And I'm going to throw you right in at the deep end, Pete. Quite an in-depth question here. I'm sure it will be an in-depth answer. Can you provide an overview of the typical tax implications for football agents operating in the UK?
Well, no holds barred. Okay. Well, I think it's probably a two-part answer, Jonathan, to cover agents who are self-employed individuals and those who are employees. Probably easier for people to recognise that if you're self-employed, there is no tax deductions at source on your income. So therefore, it is probably better known that individuals have to come forward to register with the UK tax authorities for self-assessment. The need to keep records can't be underestimated because of the inquiries that HMRC do quite regularly. And even those who are working as an employee, yes, the vast majority of their tax obligations should be taken care of by monthly deductions at source under the payroll scheme. But if they've got benefits in kind, and even if they're operating at levels where their income is above the thresholds for registering for self-assessment, you know, they've still got obligations there, because even if you're a one-man band, it is typically for you to have a company that employs you and pays your salary, but also you'll be typically taking dividends from that same company as well. And then a combination of salary and dividends could take you over thresholds and create additional balancing payments of tax, which the tax authorities are only going to know about once the tax returns themselves are filed. So whether you're employed or self-employed, I'm afraid, you know, tax just never goes away. You just need to know where to look to find it.
Pete, welcome to the show. You mentioned there the HMRC, which is the UK tax regulator or tax office. We've seen recent cases in Belgium, the Belgium tax office, the Spanish tax office being more assertive in the, I would say, the fees, commissions, agent space in terms of payments over the last, say, few years. In your experience, how well informed are football agents generally about the tax aspects of their profession and those of their playing clients?
Yes, thanks, Peter. That's a very good question. And I think in terms of their own position, agents are generally quite well informed, to be fair. So in terms of filing accounts, tax returns, annual confirmation statements at company's house, these are just ongoing compliance issues, which I think most agents are probably abreast of. Where I do think there is a slight contrast, however, is when it comes to the tax issues relating to their clients, which I think was the second part of your question. And one of the recurring conversations I have is, and this isn't being critical of the agent community, why would they know? You know, each their own. But I've had it challenged to me when I say that a player has to file a tax return. Well, why does he? Because he's an employee, and therefore all of his tax issues are taken care of by way of payroll deductions from month to month. Well, those deductions are indeed taking place, but they're referenced by a tax code, which is a little more than a guess, which is what the tax authorities tell the employing club to deploy and use in their payroll calculations. So quite often, sometimes there is too much taxes deducted month to month. So therefore, you have to file a return to reclaim the excess. But with payment of agents fees, which I'm sure we'll go on to talk about, which is creates quite a significant benefit in kind charge for the player, that hasn't been factored through the payroll deductions as a matter of course, certainly in the first year or two where this happens. So there could well be quite a sizable balancing payment tax still to pay. So I think there's, I wouldn't say it's a blind spot, but it's just a lack of awareness that the circumstances of a player's individual tax, more often than not, does require them to file. And I'm afraid I've come across too many situations where finally a client has been referred, where they've been chased not just for 1 year's tax return that's outstanding, but sometimes 3 and 4 years of tax returns outstanding. And then for bringing this matter up to date does generate not just the tax liabilities, but therefore you've also got interest and penalties for late filing and late payment of taxes. And all this could have been avoided if someone had had a more real-time conversation with the player. So it's not until someone comes along that does what I do as the tax advisor. You've got to start typically a brand new relationship with your client by giving them news they certainly do not want to hear by saying, well, I'm ever so sorry, but the consequence of filing all these returns is that you now have a quite significant outstanding tax bill to pay. And because it's a surprise, it's more often than not the case that the player, understandably, hasn't made their cash flow to accommodate this. And therefore, I've got a couple now where household name players, you know, I'm in a conversation with the tax authorities negotiating time to pay. Can't dispute the quantum of the liability, but it's such a significant amount that even, you know, a very well remunerated player doesn't have the available cash to pay the tax in one lump sum. That's quite a challenging conversation.
Yes, it is. Obviously, players don't like seeing that they maybe haven't received the right information. But what about football agents, sole proprietors or big agencies, their own tax compliance? Have you seen any major issues or challenges that actual agents and agencies face?
I think my answer there, Peter, needs to be focused more on the self-employed, so smaller agents, not necessarily household names. And I think because of the unique way in which the football world operates, there can be a lack of understanding as far as the tax authorities are concerned. I've certainly come across more than a couple of cases where accounts filed by the sole trader have been challenged by HMRC because, for example, they will see in cost of sales quite a sizable number, which seems out of kilter with a lot of other businesses. And therefore, there are lots of questions around, well, how has this inflated number been arrived at? Well, anyone who is involved in the sector will know that a lot of the time agents have to work with other agents to get a deal across the line. And therefore, yes, the income could be quite significant for a transaction, but the cost associated with that same transaction by way of payaways and thank yous for other agents, that needs to be factored in and therefore properly reported in the accounts. But it does look a little bit odd, I suppose, to the non-football specialist when looking at the numbers to say, well, you know, you've got these very high costs that are immediately associated, so you claim, with your sales. That just doesn't sound right. And that's before you get into your other sort of more direct costs, you know, like your heating, your lighting, your accounting, your travel, your subsistence. So I think a lot of smaller cases where sole traders and perhaps a couple of small partnerships have been subjected to quite intense scrutiny from HMRC because of that lack of understanding. And I've been at pains to say to various tax officers, look, you know, with the greatest respect, you just don't understand the football sector. And once you've gone through with a very detailed explanation, then the penny sometimes drops. But the pain and time that takes to get to that situation can't be underestimated.
You yourself, Pete, spent some time as a registered intermediary with English FA to help you in your role from a tax perspective and understanding the agent business and the player business. How did you find that experience and what did you learn from it?
Well, I'm not ashamed to say that was a complete marketing exercise from me. I never had any desire to represent players. But I quickly learned that if there's one thing that troubles a football agent, and indeed it got so bad that there was a standing agenda item at AFA meetings, was HMRC, the tax man. But it also afforded me to have a direct dialogue with some of the tax officers and inspectors who was invited along to the AFA meetings. And too often, I think they like to hide behind a written letter, but they were there to be got at. And sometimes I'm afraid I let them have it with both barrels in terms of what I really thought. But I just felt it needed to be said, but it was said in a professional, constructive way. And it was meant to help the situation and speed up the process of inquiry work, because as we all know, that can go on for an uncomfortable period of time.
I think from my perspective, I was actually at one of those meetings as well. And this is just my opinion. I think from my perspective, the officials from HMRC actually learned more from the agents in the way the industry works than the agents learned from HMRC in the way they address the football agents industry. So it was a peculiar situation and a bit of a paradox. Now, with the industry going through a change at the moment, we're seeing a lot of new agents come into the agents world. From a tax perspective, what would be your five most important tips for them in terms of compliance, both to safeguard themselves and their clients?
Great questions, Jonathan. Thanks. Register with HMRC or the self-assessment tax compliance system. If you're self-employed as an agent, my recommendation, rule of thumb, is to try and set aside, let's say, 25 to 30% of the income that you receive and ring fence that in perhaps a tax or revenue bank account, which is just kept solely for the purpose of paying future tax liabilities. So huge lead-in time between earning money and then facing the tax payments. Now, that requires a plan such that you've got the cash set aside. Hence, my recommendation that clients should ideally set aside at least 25%, probably near 30% or even more if they can, of every bit of income they received and put that in an account which is otherwise not touched. A ploy for people in my industry, of course, please engage the services of an accountant or a tax advisor who can help you navigate all of the issues that you're going to be facing. And yes, there is a cost to that, but it just removes the surprises, I think, in terms of projecting future tax payments. And it just sort of, I think it can pay dividends in the long term by just de-stressing the whole process. As far as players are concerned, when agents have finally negotiated a contract, whether that be the playing contract with the club or an endorsement or sponsorship agreement, I always love to see those as soon as the deal's been done. And the reason why I say that is because it then enables me to reforecast future tax liabilities. So I've had a case recently where I saw a plan contract of someone who's just signed a five-year deal. I'm able to project 5 years in advance where I think tax liabilities are going to be due and payable every successive 31st of January. And the player doesn't have to stress about scrabbling to find together what could be quite sizable sums of cash with very little notice. And I think the final and fifth bit of advice is that if you're ever unsure in this, and I do it myself, there are times, perhaps not quite daily, but certainly weekly, where a client asks me a question, I'm not entirely sure of the answer because tax is such a vast subject. I will actually, you know, press the pause button, go and ask a colleague or go and look up the answer by scouring through the tax legislation before you give the answer. So I think my final and fifth recommendation is that always seek advice if you're unsure rather than just have a guess.
The new FIFA football agent regulations, the FFAR, seemingly allow for non-agent services which fall outside the contentious issue of the cap. And as such, you've got professional services such as legal services, financial advice, investments, and arguably taxation expertise from professionals like yourself. Are allowances for an agent to provide those services irrespective of the cap on agent commissions. Do you think it's a worrying crossover of roles where agents may profess to offer tax advice if only to circumvent the cap on their agent commissions? And what could be the implications of such activity?
Yeah, this is, I can understand the thrust of the question, Jonathan. I can understand the trap that is going to be set there, because if FFAR does come through and agents' commission is restricted to, let's say, 3%, then it does open up the conversation as to these extracurricular services that could be provided. And I think we all know that looking after a player can sometimes involve a whole raft of services that are probably outside your initial scope of engagement. I certainly do that myself as a tax advisor. But if you compare a football agent receiving 3% compared to someone representing an entertainer, where typically commission is a bit nearer 20% in a lot of cases, then to keep up standards of living and income levels of enjoyment that people have been used to, yes, I think human nature being what it is, there is the risk of people saying, well, you've paid 3% for my work to get you the deal for the club, but actually I've done X, Y, Z on top of that, and that's separate to a separate fee. I'd like to think that a lot of sensible agents, if they're not lawyers or not tax advisors, won't go into those areas in any way, shape or form. Yes, they can potentially charge a little bit of time, I suspect, for making an introduction and being part of ongoing conversations that are then led by the proper professional. But I really would counsel against people purporting that they do possess legal and tax and other skills to provide the all-round services to their client, because I think the implications of that is just huge risk of getting it wrong. So, yes, it's tempting. I can see why people are thinking, well, you know, my income's going to drop as a result of the new regime, but stick to what you know would be my firm recommendation. I mean, certainly a lot of the time I'm being asked about legal matters. I'm being asked my advice on financial products and recommendations of what's hot, you know, in terms of providing a quick buck, whether it's crypto, whether it's startup business. I'm just absolutely not qualified to give advice on that. So I just don't.
Absolutely. I think Peter would concur with that as well. Now, the FFAR are in a state of limbo at the time of recording. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know territorially what's going to happen. But going on to a subject that I know from past experience is of great interest to HMRC and quite a lot of people, and it's a variation in the FFAR from FIFA. It specifies permitted dual representation, and dual representation and duality is of particular interest to HMRC. I think I'm safe in saying that. Now, with this permitted dual representation, in the cases of an agent representing both the engaging club, i.e. the buying club, and the individual or the player in a transaction, can you see this causing complications, and how do you think it will be received and treated by the tax authorities in the UK?
Well, I think the simple answer to that, Jonathan, it is already on HMRC's radar and has been for some time. I've seen inquiry after inquiry after inquiry from HMRC looking at the splits of agents' fees going back several years already. And they're now saying that their previous commentary in terms of the split of an agent's fee in dual representation cases was only merely guidance, where it was stated it's broadly 50-50 in terms of an agent doing half of his work or her work for the club and half of their work for the player. And therefore, 50% of the overall fee has been reported for tax purposes, both on the club form P11D that reports benefits and expenses, and therefore 50% only on the player's personal tax return. That's what creates the benefit in kind charge that we were just talking about a few moments ago. Now, it's been suggested by HMRC that actually 50-50 bears no commercial resemblance to what actually happened. And was the agent spending 90% of their time effectively working for the player and only 10% for the club? And therefore, the player's exposure to income tax would be much higher. And the very nature of a football agent's work is verbal much of the time. So therefore, keeping records of meetings, keeping records of phone conversations about who was saying what to whom and what particular person or club they was representing, they're just never kept. So therefore, when HMRC are asking for evidence to back up a 50-50 split or some other splits, evidence is somewhat scarce, to put it mildly. So going forward, yes, the new FFAR regulations say that dual representation is permitted. My plea to the agent community would be to say, just keep records and lots of them. And yes, it is a pain, but once you've put the phone down on a conversation or once you've come out of a meeting, perhaps when you get back to the office or back home, just dictate a file note of who said what to whom and which party you was representing, And if you can try and quantify the value of your input in that situation, that would be really, really helpful if HMRC come knocking sometime down the line.
Yeah, another aspect of FFAR, and one that FIFA quite openly speak about, and they use the term quite a lot to substantiate the FFAR, is the client pays model. Even though some aspects of this are still unclear as we go through all the various legal cases and the challenges and the refinements on a national basis, from a UK perspective, what are the effects of this approach? And can you see any problems for agents that they should try and avoid?
Well, I've already talked about, with the current situation, players being surprised when they're told they do have a tax exposure in terms of the benefit in kind charge on payment of agents' fees. And many players are struggling to pull together the amount of cash that's required to settle 45% of an agent's fee by way of the income tax charge. Well, under these new proposals, the player's on the hook for 100% of the agent's fee. So I think that seriously ramps up the communication and planning that needs to take place between the agent, the player, and certainly the financial advisor, if not the tax advisor, to make sure that there is sufficient cash that's going to be released at the appropriate moment in time. But even if it's not coming from a cash reserve, if the player needs to sell an asset, stock, shares, property, again, the tax advisor needs to be party to those conversations, because in selling some stocks and shares that have appreciated in value since they were first purchased, yes, you could be solving one problem by freeing up the cash to pay the agent's fee, but you could, in so doing, create another problem in terms of crystallising a capital gains tax charge. So I do think these situations require detailed conversation between all parties concerned to make sure that all the angles are covered. It's certainly not getting any easier, let's put it that way.
At the time this episode goes to air, in probably the middle of January 2024, it's transfer window time, especially in England, but also around Europe, a very busy time for you, as much as it is for us agents. The transfer window is a time for many agents to get the deal over the line. We also see lately a huge upsurge in player loans internationally. When agents want to get this deal over the line, they may not consider the implications of what tax is paid, because in a lot of these arrangements, clubs share the cost of the player, the salaries, etc., and they may be in two different countries. What common errors have you seen made by agents during the hectic transfer window, especially the January window, in regards to their agent activities?
Well, everything is in a bit of a cauldron, I think. And a cauldron means that there is a very high pressure situation. Lots of things are rushed because everyone's conscious of the clock ticking down towards transfer deadline. So therefore, sometimes proper account is not allowed for a review of draft documents that are prepared. Everything is then signed off, filed with the appropriate authorities, and then someone like me and the lawyer perhaps might get a full copy of the final agreements and contracts. So, for example, I have seen in an employment contract a clause that talks about image rights. Now, image rights, where we would typically try and separate those from the employment contract so they don't go through a payroll system. Well, if the image rights clause is already in the employment contract, it's quite difficult to suggest that it's something other than more income that should be subject to payroll taxes. Clause 4 of the standard Premier League contracts, which talks about how the club has got rights to certain images, that should be tweaked or even sometimes completely removed from the contract, again, to create an image rights situation. Quite often that's left in. And if I had £5, Peter, for every time I've had this situation, I would be sat on a beach somewhere, very nice, enjoying a cocktail. The player is sat there with a pen poised above a contract waiting to sign, and all the press is all arranged, the shirt has all been printed, and then someone says, do we need to seek some tax advice at this stage? And I get the phone call, and my reaction is, what the hell am I expected to do at this stage in proceedings? So I get the fact it is extremely high pressured. I get the fact that there is this furore of activity to get it over the line, but you've got to allow, or should allow, as far as possible, legal experts and tax experts to be allowed sufficient time to properly review the documents, to give their blessing to them, before you have the camera with the player pen poised above the contract waiting to sign. But the consequences of getting that sort of thing wrong, as I've seen, and I've been the one in another case where the clause about image rights was talking about payments to an image rights account. Didn't even say who the account belonged to. So again, it just leaves opportunities down the line for HMRC to come along, scrutinise these documents and start asking questions where, if you know, things had been done properly with a thorough review, we'd have cut that off straight away and they wouldn't even be in a position to ask the question because the contract would have been watertight. So it's probably a bit of a rambling answer to that question, Peter, but it's rushed, it's high pressure, and sometimes, you know, some errors can slip through.
And we're focused with this interview and this podcast on your expertise from the UK tax perspective. But there does seem to be heightened interest from tax authorities around the world in football agent activity and player activity of high profile players such as Messi and Ronaldo. And also lower down the scale, it's not just the superstars who get that scrutiny. But for me, and I might be wrong in this, Pete, and you'll correct me if I am, HMRC in England seem to be more subtle, if not covert, in their approach. But that also seems to have changed in recent years. They sent out letters via the FA to registered intermediaries a couple of years ago. There's been communications to clubs. There's been various announcements of new treatments and official documents regarding football agents. Some of that has gone a bit quiet since COVID. Is this heightened interest in these communications merely warnings in your experience, or is there a significant increased scrutiny of all agency activity in the UK?
Yeah, my personal view here, Jonathan, is that for some while now, HMRC has viewed the sports sector and particularly football as low-hanging fruit for them, which means that, you know, with the amount of money that's sloshing around in the English Premier League, arrangements that are sometimes, as we discussed earlier on, hastily thrown together, it's good pickings for HMRC. We've seen for years and years and years multiple inquiries into image rights as to whether they are commercially justifiable. We've seen the splits more recently of agents' fees. And I think the quantity of such inquiries, certainly on the agents' fee side, is up year on year. That's both for clubs, players, as well as agents. HMRC, they now have a dedicated sports section, which I think is helpful because you're dealing more regularly with the same individuals and therefore their understanding of the sports and certainly football sector is increasing. That should, in theory, help progress inquiries perhaps a bit more quickly than they have done in the past because, you know, I've been around such that in long-standing inquiries, after a year, you see another tax inspector who's new to the case come on the scene. You've always got to start the process all over again because people get moved on and moved around for different experiences. I get that from, you know, their career with the tax authorities, but that doesn't help speed up the process of what could be a very worrying, challenging time for the player who's thinking, when's all this going to end? So to have a dedicated team where you've got the same individuals that you're encountering more frequently, I think should help. But yes, I don't think the interest of HMRC will go away anytime soon. And as we just discussed with FFAR and the continuing duality of representation situation is going to run and run.
In these situations where the worst does happen and an agent or a client haven't met their tax obligations, what are the potential risks and penalties for them?
Well, yes, HMRC, once they've issued an inquiry, or even sometimes when they've issued one of their so-called nudge letters where they're saying, we suspect there may be something you want to tell us. My plea to the agent community is please do not ignore that letter. Get expert advice. It's something that's not going to go away. And the longer it's left, potentially the worse it's going to get. The consequences for getting it wrong, I mean, you know, we've talked about late payment of taxes and therefore interest and penalties. But at the same time, you know, I get it from HMRC's point of view. They are doing a job. They need to be treated professionally. So therefore, you know, engage a professional tax advisor to deal with the HMRC inspector. Please don't lie. Please don't falsify documents. And the temptation there is that a lot of the time, coming back to what we said earlier on, HMRC have got better at this, but initially believed that there was a lot of documentation that they wasn't seeing. So they was asking for things like, well, show us your meeting notes of the meeting with the finance director of this football club. Who said what to whom and in what quantity, blah, blah, blah. Well, effectively, HMRC is asking for a document to be supplied that simply does not exist. So therefore, please don't go away and try and create it. It doesn't exist. Simply say it does not exist. And if that doesn't satisfy them, then, you know, my fallback position is to go and get witness statements. So there are tactics and it's a bit of a game that you can, you know, dance around with tax officers. At the end of the day, of course, we mustn't lose sight of, in my opinion, that we're only after the same answer. We want the client, the agent, or the player to pay the right amount of tax. No more, no less. So that needs to be respected on both sides. I mean, in serious cases I've come across in the past where perhaps people have, and this is not just in the agent community, this is with clients generally, they've put stuff offshore. I thought, well, if it's offshore, it's out of sight, out of mind for everybody. Well, these days, beware, of course, because there's a greater degree of exchange of information between the UK tax authorities and tax authorities in other jurisdictions. because with offshore, you know, word is evasion, the penalty could be 200% of the tax liability, which usually focuses people's minds. So paying the tax itself is expensive enough. And then you've got an interest charge because it's late payment. But if in the case of, you know, severe deliberate non-compliance or non-reporting, your penalty could be 200% of the tax. And I look back to the autumn statements, week 3 of November, for serious tax fraud, the maximum custodial sentence was increased from 7 to 14 years. So it can get really, really serious in the most severe of cases. So if there are some, let's call them irregularities in tax history and filing and compliance, the firm plea is to engage an experienced professional, come clean 100%, accept that you are going to face a fine, you will pay some interest, but don't offend again.
And I think we've skirted around another subject there. We've skirted around image rights to an extent, which is a subject in itself. And we've skirted around the topic of the difference between evasion and avoidance. So I think we've done quite well on that one, Pete, because that's a topic in itself as well. That's probably a whole conference, if anything. Now, if an agent or one of their clients is in that situation where there's a bit of a panic sets in, they're subject to an investigation or they've got a notice, or as I've heard in cases, the agent opens up the drawer of a new client or is presented with a box full of brown letters from HMRC, what should they do?
Yeah, don't close the drawer again very quickly. Pretend they, you know, that what's just happened didn't happen. It really is just accepting that if you've got letters that have been supplied in brown envelopes, there's a fair chance that HMRC have got wind of something anyway. The longer you leave it before you become compliant, the worse it's going to be. People do get brownie points and can negotiate a better settlement overall if they come forward and volunteer information rather than wait to be challenged. You're on the front foot, you're in more control of the process, whereas it's a very, very, very uncomfortable ride at times if you're on the back foot and HMRC are firing questions at the player or the agent left, right and centre, and everyone's looking at someone else saying, well, I don't really know how to answer this, do you? And that's met with the same response. So engage a professional who knows what they're doing, that can navigate these choppy waters. And a lot of the time, you know, it's perhaps not quite as bad as you might think, because a case I had involved an agent who'd received, you know, a reasonable amount of commission from their hard-earned work and hadn't done anything in terms of approaching HMRC with tax returns and accounts, but was panicking when perhaps the guilt trip got them to the point where they thought they'd got to do something. They were panicking that they would be liable to tax on that income. I said, well, you will be, but you must have incurred some expenses, for example, in getting to that position. Well, I did. Yeah, I did. And then by the time we factored in all the expenses and got to a net profit situation, the tax liability was at a level where the guy was completely comfortable coming forward anyway. It's not the end of the world. We can park this quite quickly and then you can move on. But please move on, recognising that from, you know, every year going forward, you will need to go through a compliance process and we will be asking you for information and we will be charging you a fee for that. But he was like, no, the headache of what I've just been through compared to paying someone a fee for taking care of all of that, it's just peace of mind it gives me. So he was able to achieve a quite speedy outcome for this guy that he was very pleased with.
A complicated topic, something that I know stresses a lot of agents out and very time consuming as well for them. So, Pete, thank you very much for your expertise, your expert advice and a lot of the explanation on the subject.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you both. You know, trying to make tax an interesting subject that's going to retain people's attention for more than a couple of minutes is not easy, but it's always challenging, but never dull. So I hope that was useful.
That's great, Pete. Thanks very much. Take care.
Sure. All the best.
There we go then. A hugely complicated topic, dare I say taxing, with so many facets, whether it be different areas of tax, different jurisdictions, different laws, legislation and rules, plus how to approach it. I do quickly want to point out a few things in relation to that chat we had with Pete Fairchild there. Firstly, that was recorded back in December, as at this time of year, Pete is absolutely inundated working with many agents, players and clubs due to the January transfer window. So some tax legislation may have changed in the intervening period. Secondly, we also have the suspension now of elements of FFAR that were discussed in there, but we don't know whether those are going to come back. And finally, it is important for those of us who don't work in tax, similar to law, to recognise there are many specialist areas of tax. And as such, we couldn't go into those specifics, as we would probably need many hours to do that and possibly a panel of Pete's experts, associates and colleagues to cover everything a football agent or their clients may have to deal with at one time or another.
It's a very complicated area, as we've seen. Many countries, tax players, clubs and agents, and a lot of tax cases are in the news for players. Now, a lot of players want to go to countries where they pay on net terms, which is quite common in Asia, where the club pays any income, GST or VAT, GST is general service tax. Now, it's three ways: what the player will pay, what the club will pay in tax, and what the agent will pay. That needs to be delineated and clear cut. You need to give your client, as an agent, they're the principal, where to go for advice to know who's paying what tax, because we know there's always been cases of people getting themselves in trouble.
And one of those specialist areas of tax in the UK, and also some other jurisdictions that you touched upon, Peter, in its various forms, is VAT, or value-added tax. People can be forgiven for thinking VAT is a simple tax, a percentage added to the value of certain goods or services, but it can get far, far more complex than that, not least when it comes to football transfers and ultimately football agents. As such, a particular case caught our eye and many in the tax, accounting and football world last year. Now, the article, we've got two sources here. We've got what I think is the original one from Anthony Reeves at Mitchell Moores on the 3rd of May, 23. And then we've got one by Rick Lowry at Accounting Web on the 12th of May, 2023. And it talks about a defeat for HMRC in a football agent VAT appeal. So referring to the information presented in these articles, and as I interpret it and understand it, as I'm far from a tax expert, as my accountant and Pete Fairchild will no doubt concur. This is a football agent who has won an appeal against HMRC, the UK tax authorities, over a VAT tax liability. The liability was incurred for services relating to the international transfer of a player. The complication seems to be caused by the fact that rather than vary the standard template representation agreement from the English Football Association, the FA, which would have required FA approval, they use what is referred to as a waiver letter in addition to the standard agreement. This was because the business model of the agency was that they would receive a percentage of the client wages, i.e. the player, nothing unusual there, but they did not charge the client themselves, and instead the club paid all of the agent fees. The parties involved, as we're led to believe, were a UK-based agency, an Italian engaging or buying club, and the player and the releasing or selling club were both Portuguese. The fees reported were €4 million total, paid over a two-year period, and the first instalment invoice was for €500,000. Now, understandably, there's going to be conflicting opinions here between the agents and their advisors and HMRC. There's some very nuanced and complicated issues that we won't go into, such as when the waiver letter was issued. However, as I see it, the crux of the matter here lies in the fact that, one, the agent presented it as their service was to the club, and thus relationship was a B2B or a business-to-business relationship with a different tax treatment to that should it be a business-to-consumer relationship, i.e. the player. The tax authorities, however, I believe saw the service provision either full or in part to the player, and thus the agent's fee is taxable by means of VAT. So we're talking about roughly €440,000 that would be due in VAT. So in summary, on what seems a very long and convoluted case, the decision came down to the wording of the agreement, something you'll be glad to hear as a lawyer, Peter. And it appeared that the appeal of the agency was allowed in full based on the fact that the place of supply of the services by the agent was Italy, and therefore VAT was not due as the services were not provided in the UK. I will say, however, Peter, I think this is absolute nuts. that such matters get to this point, but it is the fractured nature of the industry and the complications agents, players and clubs face. Yet I can see how it happened. I doubt very much it is or will be the only such case. And scarily, I think it very likely we will see more of these sorts of cases because of the increasingly fractured and confused nature of football agent regulations around the world. Not least the saga of FFAR and the confusion on such things as dual representation, tripartite representation, switching, non-agent services, and dare I say the dreaded word, capping. It's a total minefield for agents and their clients, no matter how compliant and conscientious an agent may try to be.
I think it came down to what you mentioned, the model. A waiver was used, and a waiver is always utilized when you want to do something that's outside the agreement or you want to waive rights. Also, this is about international business. They used an international consultancy model where a lot of consultants use where was the income derived? Where was the deal done? Where was the VAT payable? And the way it was structured, it was not related to the UK for this transaction, at least, because it's always a case-by-case transaction. We know with double taxation treaties and all that, you can't pay tax in two places. And that also plays a role. Italy was seen as the place where this deal was made. But the appeal was allowed in full, so that's a very strong decision. But it turned, as you mentioned, Jonathan, on the wording of the agreements. We'll see a lot more of these cases, but you need specific advice of this. You need not just tax accountants, but tax lawyers, and they're very specific in that area, Jonathan.
Playing devil's advocate for 1 minute, you could argue that if the agency had abided by the FA standard template, the dispute would never have happened. But you could again then argue, was the template agreement from the football authorities fit for purpose, or was it overly restrictive in a commercial agreement between independent parties? Especially if you throw in restrictive timescales that may well have been applicable due to a transfer window, for example. Another question here is whether the matter was investigated by the football authorities on the grounds of a breach of the agent or intermediary regulations.
I'm not privy to the case that would argue that there is disguising here, but the vast sums of money involved in top-level football transfers, it's understandable that the HMRC, the British Tax Office, may be concerned that such structuring enables the provision of services effectively made in the UK to should be taxed in the UK. The VAT has got to be paid by someone, and if the HMRC will make further claims on big transaction. But they will be looking through a lens on all big transactions going forward. And as you mentioned, interesting to see if there's some relationship with the Football Association.
I know quite a few people from the football world who've experienced scrutiny and sometimes investigations from the tax authorities, such as HMRC. And this includes agents, players, clubs, and even club officials. In fact, I was credited for mediating indirectly in one such resolution and bringing a case to a close. And although this is headlined somewhat as a victory for the agency in the case, I think it best to do everything you can in terms of compliance and avoid the penalties in the first place. Back to having the right expert advice and exercising due diligence and not cutting corners. Yet that advice, planning and preparation, may well be costly at the start, but in the long run, it may turn out to be more cost effective. And I can guess this case cost a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of stress just to reach a conclusion.
Yes, and I think I mentioned earlier that it's international business. Taxes in Asia, in my part of the world, can be lower in some countries, or you get net, you get a package. You know, in Malaysia, it's up to 28%, Thailand, 35%, Korea, 35%, I think, Japan, 40%. My country of Australia can go up to close to 46.5%. And there's also money paid into pension funds. If you're at a team for 1-2 years, social contribution, solidarity funds, when can you access those? And talking about Asia, image rights are not that well developed in this region. Even Australia, where we have a strong sports marketing culture, the tax office is careful to look at any companies you set up about image rights, whether you can split between your individual income and the company's income, which may be based in a low tax country. So everyone's looking at those things as well. So it's a complicated area and you need the right advice. Now, I want to move on to another angle. It's the club angle. And there's an article, a very interesting article entitled Premier League clubs avoided £250 million in tax, an expert has estimated. It was published last year, 30th of March 2023, by Ben Chu and Mike Cohen from the BBC. It's tax policy associates that have made some research saying that over £250 million have been avoided over 3 years. It's an estimate, and this relates to also football agents who are paid to represent both players and clubs in negotiations. So a lot of these multi-representation type agreements. The article mentions that the HMRC is investigating a number of clubs. A lot of this tax that hasn't been paid allegedly is because of dual representation, that player agents or football agents are acting on behalf of clubs, players, and there are other agents involved as well. The tax policy associate who actually did the estimate are claiming, for instance, in 2021, $81 million was not paid. In 2020, $91 million was not paid by acquiring clubs and their agents. When I mean acquiring clubs, club engaging the player and agents who represented them. And we've got some clubs here. The Association of Football Agents have disputed distinct tax findings because they do not understand how the football transfer market works.
I had a frustrated smile on my face when considering this article, Peter, given not only what we've discussed in this episode and past episodes, the situation with agent regulations currently, and the history of tax and football in the UK as well as other countries. I'll stick with the UK, as that's where the majority of my experience is on the topic of tax compliance in the agent's world. But probably 3 to 4 years ago, maybe longer, HMRC seemingly changed their approach to football and notably towards agents, as I think Pete mentioned in his interview. This included letters forwarded via the FA to registered intermediaries from a senior official at HMRC. In addition to this, HMRC also sent representatives to the Association of Football Agents General Meeting in Barnet. But it was quite evident there that there was little comprehension or understanding by HMRC officials of how football agents work or the practicalities. Now, prior to this change, I'm confident in saying HMRC's football investigations team was under-resourced and only really had a few people in it. So they really needed to up their game. Added to this, I've been reliably informed on several occasions that the relationship with the FA has been far from a constructive or cooperative one, especially on agent-related matters. Now, HMRC don't like dual representation and never have done. This assumption that they agreed a 50-50 split on agent fees, whether it be with clubs, the FA, or the Premier League, is a myth that has been spread for many years. And I have that from the horse's mouth at HMRC. It is more accurate to say that the 50-50 split was a line of tolerance for HMRC. Now, there has been change, dare I say progress, from HMRC in relation to agents and agent activity. They have issued guidance on tax treatment of agents' fees and the obligations of agents, which I must say that agents operating in the UK must be aware of, and we'll put the links in the show notes, of course. HMRC are watching developments with FFAR, but they're probably as clear on all of that as the rest of us at the moment. However, articles like this and other factors lead me to think that the majority of agents are, for HMRC, the sprat to catch the mackerel, as there are bigger tax liabilities for the tax authorities to chase, namely the clubs. The matter of HMRC looking into football is nothing new. There's many historic cases of disputes between HMRC and football on matters we've discussed in this episode and others which date back many, many years. VAT on agents' fees in a transfer is nothing new. I think one such case and dispute was highlighted with Birmingham City Football Club back in 2007. And on the matter of image rights, we might talk about Ronaldo today, but the late Trevor Francis, who sadly passed away last year, childhood hero of mine, a superstar in his own right and a real gentleman, and the first £1 million English transfer, I'm reliably informed he and his advisors were subject to HMRC scrutiny on matters similar to image rights and management companies as far back as the 1970s and 1980s. So my only advice to agents when it comes to tax and compliance is get the right advisors, be diligent, keep records, and don't get dragged into dodgy dealings. As even being complicit or facilitating tax evasion in the UK, whether you benefit from it or not, is, as I understand it, a criminal offence.
Yes, agreed. We know that a lot of tax officers have understandings with the way they deal with matters. They might have a 50-50 split, like you mentioned earlier, or they allow certain deductions, not beyond a point, but this can change very quickly. It's also the contract you have with your player, the contracts or mandates you have with other agents or clubs. Ensure that they also explain who is going to have to pay the tax, because it is an international business, but it's also a national business. So you need to know who stands where. Also, forget this sometimes, Jonathan, our tax invoices, when it is time to get paid, need to be accurate and itemized. That's very important to reflect the services offered and what tax is applicable.
Dare I say, I very much doubt with FFAR, and we're back to FFAR, FIFA have thought about the tax implications and complications created for many in football now. And with the current confusion over regulation and suspensions of parts of FFAR, those conflicting regulations between jurisdictions, it doesn't help on the factor of tax awareness for agents and others involved.
Yes, tax is an important matter, not just for agents, but for their players. We all need specialist advice. One point that sometimes we forget is sometimes there are short-term contracts. So players also need to know if they're still considered a resident by their home country, if they've only got a short-term contract in another country, and maybe they might be taxed in that country. So these are all things to consider: where you are paying your taxes, where are you domiciled. Now, we're come to the end of the show, but if we can request one extra thing, please share the show's posts, spreading the awareness amongst your network and also other potential listeners who may be interested in our topics or the agents industry or the agents world. Most active on LinkedIn, given our nature of our show and the subject matter for a lot of agents. Also, we are planning and preparing shows for the months ahead now. So if there are any topics you would like covered, like we had previously, people asking for Saudi Arabia, or guests you would like to hear from on the show, or questions you would like answered, please let us know.
Yeah, very heavy show, Peter. Very in-depth. I'm off for a lie down. But just quickly, thank you to all of those who sent us best wishes over the Christmas and New Year period with comments and feedback about the agent's angle. It is very much appreciated. We do this voluntarily, and it is our intention to keep the podcast free to access. Yes, it takes up a lot of time with planning and production. So when we get those positive messages, comments, and social media shares, knowing that our efforts are appreciated and help not just agents, but others in the football world, it does make doing this all the more worthwhile. So until the next episode, take care, everyone. And it's bye from me.
Bye from me.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information, and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends, and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.